Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by Spoken. Remember them? Essentially, Spoken is a system that lets you get English lessons direct to your phone through messaging apps, including WeChat, WhatsApp, Viber, Facebook Messenger, and Line. And with Spoken, you chat to your English instructor, and they send you different tasks that involve some reading, some listening, some writing, and some speaking using your phone's microphone. The tasks are adapted to your needs, and you can do those tasks whenever you want. And here's what the guys at Spoken are offering to you as part of this promotion. So you get a free 60-minute one-to-one private lesson with a trained native speaking instructor and a free assessment of your current English skills. Now, this free lesson is essentially a no-strings-attached free trial. You can check out the free trial, the one-hour lesson. You can check that out free and then just walk away if you want afterwards, or if you choose to, you can go ahead and buy a learning plan. It's up to you. And if you choose to buy a plan, Luke's English Podcast listeners get a 20% discount for the first month, and that's for any plan at all. All right? So a free 60-minute trial lesson with a free assessment of your English, and then 20% off any learning plan if you choose to take one. To get all of this, go to getspoken.com/LEP. or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, 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 hello. How are you? Why is my voice doing this? I don't know. This is just the way that I've decided to start this episode. I didn't really even decide to start like that. This is just the way it has happened. Sometimes I just press record and start talking, and I have to just keep going, even if it's weird, like this one. All right, fine. You don't mind, do you? No, Luke, it's fine. Okay, good. So here is the sixth and final part of this series about the Collins Words of the Year. And in this one, I'm still talking to my friend Amber, a friend of the podcast, one of the pod pals, as you know, about this list of words chosen by the Collins Dictionary team for 2018. These are words that were used a lot this year, probably because they reflect various issues which are big at the moment and which lots of people are talking about in the media, online, and in normal life. Because obviously life in the media is not entirely normal life, is it? Anyway, these words were used a lot this year. Interestingly, it seems that the issues of the moment are things like the environment, climate change, Brexit, identity politics, mental health, relationships, diet, lifestyle trends, technology, football, gender relations, race relations, and the latest dance craze. So these are the things that we're talking about in this series. I'm happy to be joined by Amber because it means that there are some unexpected funny moments, conversational tangents, and general laughter. In this one, for example, we end up talking about obsessional bird watching, Marvel movies, and what Scarlett Johansson is like in real life. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I will speak to you again on the other side, and I mean on the other side of the recording, not like in the spirit world. Ooh, on the other side, like we're going to go through into another spiritual dimension. Obviously, we are going to go through to another spiritual dimension because that's what happens every time you listen to Luke's English Podcast, right? You enter and you cross over into another dimension of sorts. What are you talking about? I don't know. I'm just rambling, aren't I? I hope you enjoy our conversation. That's the point. And I'll speak to you again on the other side. So let's carry on with the next word from the words of the year list, which is plogging. Plogging. What's that then? What's plogging? Well, listen on and you will find out. The next word is plogging.
Plogging.
Did you know about plogging?
I did, yeah.
What is plogging?
It's running. It's Swedish, isn't it?
It sounds a bit Swedish.
I mean, how do
they pronounce it in Sweden? Plogging. Plogging.
Plogging. Plogging. I don't think it's Swedish.
I think it is.
They do it in Sweden.
It is.
But an ing ending is not a Swedish word.
But I'll tell you what. Okay, so it's a noun. It's a recreational activity which originated in Sweden.
Yes, sir.
And it combines jogging with picking up litter.
Yes.
So you go jogging, jog, jogging, jogging, and then you pick up litter while you go jogging.
Yeah.
And it comes from the Swedish word plocka, which I probably mispronounced.
Plocka.
Plocka. I don't know how to pronounce it.
No, we don't.
Anyway, any Swedish people, you can, you know, comment and tell us how to actually say it.
Yeah.
It comes from the Swedish word plocka, which means to pick.
Yeah.
And then jogging. So plocka plus jogging, plogging.
Yes.
Plogging. Okay, so we get the idea. You go jogging, and while you're jogging, you pick up litter that you see on the floor as you go. Litter, of course, is rubbish that people have thrown on the floor or dropped on the floor. I can't stand litter.
Me neither.
I really hate it.
Do you know who really hates it?
No.
David Sedaris.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
Yes.
David Sedaris, the writer.
But I feel people drop litter a lot less. You know, I feel like there was this, like, awareness campaign, because if you watch Mad Men, you know, that series which is set in the 50s, there's this scene in it where they have a picnic, and after their picnic they just throw all their litter on the floor and they go. And the 1950s and 60s, it was like that. Do you remember when you were little, like the litter bug, and there was advertising campaigns like raising awareness, don't drop litter.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a thing, you don't drop litter. People still do, but it is frowned on.
Yeah,
in Britain,
right? Yes. So the idea of that it's bad to drop litter is a relatively new concept in, you know, like in the last few decades. That before that, people would be just dropping litter. And
no problem.
No, really?
Yes.
Okay. But I feel like there's more litter now than there used to be. That's a kind of, I don't know if that's just my gammon side coming through of like, it's not as good as it used to be. You know, I feel like there's more litter going on now. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Nico, he went to... he travels a lot, and he says in some countries litter's just not a concept.
Yeah, Japan.
Well, I mean, they don't have litter.
No.
But he was talking about India. And by that litter, it doesn't matter.
Oh, you mean in India, they just drop litter on the floor and no one minds, no one cares. It's just
exactly.
Stuff that's on the floor, yeah. Whereas in Japan, it's like the opposite thing, where it's just like you do not drop stuff on the floor. Even if you're smoking a cigarette, you have your own little personal ashtray, which you have in your pocket. And you open the ashtray. If you're standing outside your office, you open the ashtray and you tap the ash into the little ashtray that you hold.
I wish that was like that here in France.
And then you put your cigarette out very discreetly, maybe on the underside of the special part of the ashtray, and then you drop the cigarette butt into the ashtray and you close it and you put it back in your pocket. No ash goes on the floor. The cigarette butt does not end up on the floor. Sometimes. I mean, there are some cases where people do tap their ash on the floor in Japan, of course, but it's a phenomenon in Japan, the little portable ashtray, which in the UK, they've never seen that. Certainly not in Paris, where people are throwing cigarettes everywhere.
Well, apparently in the UK, they're getting very strict, because a friend of mine said he threw his butt on the floor and was charged 50 quid.
Oh, yeah, really?
Fined, yes.
Well, good.
I support it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of litter. There is a lot. People should pick it up. I go jogging.
Mm-hmm.
I've just started.
Have you just started jogging?
Couch to 5K.
What?
I went this morning.
What's Couch to 5K?
It's an app. You can get it. And and the idea is you go from your couch, although I'd call it sofa, to running, being able to run 5K.
5 kilometres.
5 kilometres, and you build up slowly, very slowly,
okay.
Which is just as well.
When did you start?
3 runs ago, this week.
And so, first run, how long?
Well, each run is 30 minutes, but you start with a 5-minute walk, warm-up walk, and then you run for a minute and walk for a minute and a half, and then you run for a minute. So in total, you run about 8 minutes.
But you're easing yourself into it.
Yes.
And so eventually you'll be running 5 kilometres.
Without stopping. That's the idea.
And so how did it feel, the first walk for a minute, run for a little bit?
The first run felt easy. Mm. And then the second one also felt easy. But then I didn't do, as they told me to, the stretching. And I did. It was really achy, even though I'd only run for 6 minutes.
You've got to stretch. You've got to warm up. You've got to warm down as well.
And then I did one this morning and it was a bit challenging.
30 minutes, but do you know what kind of distance you ran? Does the app tell you?
Yes, the app does tell me. I think I ran about 2.5 kilometres.
Where are you running in Paris?
Parc Monceau.
Ah, with all the other runners.
Yes.
Parc Monceau.
And I'm a bit embarrassed because I'm walking for the majority of my run.
Yeah.
I just put my headphones on and listen to a podcast.
Okay. All right, cool. So you're jogging. That's great.
I have to get the metro. To the park.
You take the metro to the jogging area. Yes. You jog around this crowded park full of joggers and then you get the metro home again.
Yes.
Why don't you jog home?
Because it's too far.
Yeah.
And it's not pleasant. I did jog around the streets and it wasn't nice and there's lots of children. You've got to stop for all the cars and then it ruins your app if you're only running for a minute.
I can't even walk down the street in Paris. I mean, there's too many people. It's too crowded.
And the reason I wanted to jog was to see a little bit of nature. There's not much in Paris and it's so beautiful. The trees and the leaves all still autumny. So if you jog around the city, it's ugly. I mean, the city's beautiful, but it's not that same pleasure.
It's a bit dangerous and annoying. You're constantly having to get out of people's way. You're jogging into the road where there are cars and stuff. And Parc Monceau is a very pretty place as well. So it must be nice to jog. So it wasn't too crowded?
No. In the morning is fine because I go in the week. On the weekend, it's a
different story.
It's the highway, a jogger's highway.
I see. So you're jogging. So did you pick up any litter when you were jogging?
I didn't blog because Parc Monceau is very clean, but I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. My dad picks up litter all the time. Pretty much every day he goes off for a walk.
Good for him.
He walks down the road into the park. He walks around the park. He does his bird watching. So he keeps a daily count of the birds.
What's it called? Not a twitcher. A twitcher.
No, he's a birder. Bird watcher.
What's the difference between a twitcher?
A twitcher is someone who is obsessive about bird watching.
It's just the next level.
It's the next level. My uncle is a twitcher, and my uncle is one of the best bird watchers in the country. Yeah, I know that sounds ridiculous to some people, but bird watching is really great. It's a really nice thing to do.
I would love to do it.
Birds are beautiful. They are. When you really take the time to watch them and look at them and observe their behavior and start to identify the differences between them, and you spend some nice time sitting quietly watching birds at a bird reserve or something, or just in some nice natural spot. Birds are really, really beautiful things, and their behavior, the way they the way they move and the way they fly, they can be very aesthetically pleasing.
Did you ever see the starlings on Brighton Pier?
Yeah. Starlings are like little black birds. They're actually not black. They've got beautiful shiny plumage when you look at them in the light. But starlings are, let's say, little black birds, and they fly together at certain times of year in huge groups. And you get these massive clouds of starlings flying together in groups. And they're roosting. They kind of land in the trees. And then together they all take off at the same time. And you get these swirling, incredible clouds of starlings all flying. There's thousands of them in these clouds, and it's an absolutely incredible natural spectacle when they're all flying together.
They're like fish. They look like a sort of school of fish. Yeah. You know, they move just like fish.
Exactly. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. So there were starlings in Brighton.
Yeah. And then every evening at the end of the pier,
certain times of year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Incredible. Yeah. 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 Bird watching. My dad is a birder, and he likes to. He takes his binoculars and he goes to places where you can go birding. So he goes to like local bird reserves, which are like areas like reservoirs, maybe where there's like water and maybe some reed beds and things like that. And you can walk around and visit these hides. A hide is like a little wooden hut, which has been designed so that you can quietly observe the birds without disturbing them. And so you go into the hide and it's very quiet and it's like got that nice wood smell, and you open up the flap of the hide, revealing the view of this stretch of water And with reed beds and stuff. And there are loads of birds just, you know, walking around, flying around, feeding and, you know, and doing whatever it is they do. And you sit there and you get your binoculars and you scan from left to right or right to left. And you just, you know, start to notice all the different birds that you see. And you can, if you're very observant, you can spot some quite rare ones and quite beautiful ones. Even in England, which is not like a tropical place where you get these extraordinary parrots and other birds like that, but our bird life is very, very rich in England, in the UK, because we get a lot of migratory birds that travel, you know, from one part of the world to the other, and they often settle in the UK because of its geographical location. So it's a really interesting thing to do. So that's birding, but being a twitcher, that's where you take it to the next level. So my uncle, he doesn't do it so much anymore, but there was a period where he was like twitching a lot. And twitching, I mean, the word, the name makes sense, because you can imagine someone sort of twitching because they're nervous. So it's like, so my uncle he used to have a pager. This is before the days of mobile phones.
This is the 90s.
This is back in the early 90s. He had a pager, which is like a little thing that buzzed. He'd have it in his pocket, or he'd strap it to his belt. He's a carpenter, so he would be doing carpentry jobs and things like that. Yeah, he's brilliant. Brilliant skills. He built my bedroom when I was growing up.
This is your uncle, my dad's...
My mum's brother.
Your mum's brother.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast. He talked about how he once met Paul McCartney. He bumped into Paul McCartney in a shop, and he just said, "Hey, Paul." And Paul was like, "All right." And they had a little chat.
That's amazing.
They chatted about birds.
He does seem like a nice person.
Paul. Yeah. I think so. I think he's all right. But anyway, so my uncle, he used to have a pager. And so he'd be doing his work or just sort of having lunch or whatever. And sometimes he'd come over on a Sunday and he'd have lunch with us and his wife and my auntie. And he'd have the pager. And the pager would go bzzz, bzzz. And he'd look at it and he'd be like, "Oh, God." And it would be some message saying some, you know, lesser spotted thrush has been spotted, has been, you know, there's some rare bird up in Scotland and here's where it is. And he'll be like, and then he'll start twitching. He wouldn't actually facially, he wouldn't physically twitch.
Because he wanted to go see it.
Because he'd be like, in his mind, he's going, "Can I feasibly leave this lunch and get in the car
to Scotland
and drive at high speed to Scotland in order to stand in a field with a bunch of other twitchers and see this bird?"
Yeah.
And maybe even photograph it if it's possible, but certainly get views of it and then tick it off a list so that you've got an ever-growing list of birds that you've seen. And he would. There were days when he would jump in the car and he would drive dangerously to go somewhere to see the bird. I mean, I always thought it was... obviously the driving quickly is not a great idea, but I always found it kind of cool that he would go off to these like rugged locations and spot these rare birds. And he would tell us about his adventures, you know, he would talk about experiences he'd had. And, you know, he got himself in some funny situations driving in the night and sort of trying to find this field with this bird in it and the other twitchers that he would meet and stuff.
I think it's nice. I mean, it's nice to have any sort of some connection to nature. But it can go too far. It sounds sounds like
a bit obsessive.
It's when it gets into that list ticking.
Yeah.
It's not just for the pleasure of being in nature. It's more like a, but whatever.
But my uncle's one of those people who's like, you know, he's in those record lists of you know, birds that, very rare birds that have been identified in England. And he was like, you know, this bird identified by, you know, Nick Hallam. So he's kind of like a recognised...
he's a top twitcher.
He's a top twitcher, yeah. So, but anyway, I was saying dad is a birder. So he goes for these walks in the park every day and he makes his bird list of the birds he's seen in the park. Mm-hmm. And often there are some really, you know, nice birds that most people just wouldn't notice. He actually does guided tours of the park these days.
Really?
Bird walks.
Bird tours?
Yeah, where he walks around and he shows people the birds. And also they listen for the songs, the bird songs as well. So my dad can walk through the park and he'd be like, "Oh, there's a there's a redstart, or there is a you know, some quite rare birds, like there's a nuthatch or whatever.
I'd love to know more about birds.
Yeah.
There's a,
but I was saying that while he's walking, he also picks up all the litter that he finds.
Yes, and that's great.
And he comes back with, you know, plastic bags full of litter, which he throws away and stuff. And he doesn't use gloves, though, which is the thing that we all think, like, Dad, you should put gloves on when you do that.
Maybe for Christmas. You could get him one of the litter pickers. You know, yeah. a little grabber.
Like those little grabber thing, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think he doesn't want to make a big show of it, so he's quite happy to just bend down and pick them up.
Is it so disgusting?
I don't know, really. I don't know.
If he's got no open wounds on his hands.
He washes his hands at the end, yeah, it's fine.
Is it really?
He's fine. I mean, he's not
picking up syringes, biohazard. He's just picking up crisp packets.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was plogging and,
well, good onto your dad,
and picking up litter. We're both looking at the clock here.
Yes.
We've got 1, 2, 3
Three more words left.
Let's finish the job.
And then lunch.
Then lunch.
Okay.
The next word is VAR or VAR. It's an abbreviation and it means video assistant referee. So, yep. Amber, did you watch the World Cup this year at all?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah?
I made a video about it.
Oh, you did?
With Sarah.
Yeah, you made one of your videos.
I watched some of it. Nico didn't watch any.
Your husband?
He doesn't care about football.
He's not a football fan.
At all.
But you watched some of the games.
Yeah, and I watched the final, of course.
Yeah, because it was France that won.
Yes.
And so we couldn't really avoid it here, I guess. Do you follow football? Are you interested?
No.
No?
No, it's overpaid nonsense. I mean, it's nice football, interesting, you know, communities, blah. There's something interesting there, but I don't know, it's a lot of money. I mean, I don't care about sport. I'm not sporty.
It's very, very big business now, which I have to say does turn me off a bit. I love the game. I absolutely adore the game of football.
Mm.
And all the other stuff, if you forget about all the other stuff, all the money that's involved in it, the overpaid prima donnas,
yeah.
Neymar rolling along the ground... If you just forget about all those other things and just focus on the game and the way it's played, I absolutely love it. I think it really is a beautiful game
It's a great game. Brings people together, and you know,
just it's exciting to watch. It's just there's something about the fact that you can't use your hands; they've got to kick the ball.
I mean, it's skillful,
really skillful.
It is compelling.
And there are moments when it's so cool, like certain goals when certain like long range goals are scored and stuff. It's like, wow, the drama.
So does the video, because in a way, part of it, these referees, the video assisted referee.
Yeah. So that's what VAR, it's basically video assistant referee. And it's a new system that was brought in this year in the World Cup. I think it's probably when it was first properly used in the World Cup. And it's a system where if the referee on the pitch wants to, he can request a second opinion from the video assistant referee. And there's several aspects to it. One aspect is that there's a screen on the side of the pitch. The referee can run over and have a look at the replay on the screen. And the other thing is that there's a group of people in a room who have lots of screens and they're reviewing the replay footage. And then they're speaking to the referee through a microphone and giving their decision. And then the referee ultimately, I think, makes the final decision on it. That's the whole system.
And what do you think about it?
It's like the question is, has it been a success? Is it helping the game? And it's kind of like yes and no.
Yeah.
Basically. So it works well in some instances, and in other instances, it's kind of the same thing, really. So in the instances it works well is when it's a black or white decision. For example, did the ball cross the line? And if the referee didn't quite see it, and VAR will tell you if the ball crossed the line or not.
Yeah.
Or it will tell you, was the guy offside or not? You know, and if it's cut and dry, black and white, VAR will give you the answer.
Okay.
But then if there's any interpretation involved, like, for example, if it's a handball situation and you're trying to work out, was that intentional or was that accidental handball? VAR just doesn't necessarily solve the problem, and it's still just people interpreting events. And VAR can even, like, because you're watching slowed down footage.
Mm-hmm.
And when... slow motion can make it look like someone is intentionally touching the ball when in real normal speed it's obviously just an accident. So VAR can kind of twist things a little bit.
I think because there's so much money involved, people want it to be fair.
Yeah.
But then part of me, I mean, I'm not into football, but then sometimes some of the great moments of football could never have happened with VAR.
Like?
Maradona.
The hand of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, I know that we that was against... I mean, I know it's contentious, yeah. but part of it is brilliant. Yeah. Part of it makes it sort of like yeah. funny because you've got away with it. Yeah. Like, yeah, the referee... He didn't see, and that's how it goes. Like, it's tricks, it's tricky. It's kind of a game. We're playing. And the stakes are so high now with all the money. Like, if you pull one over on the referee, it's serious business now. You know, people are going to lose their careers or whatever. It takes away a little bit from the, like, well, he didn't see. We got away with it.
Right.
The naughtiness of
the simplicity of basically the referee on the pitch is the one who makes the decision, and it's simple.
Mm.
And that kind of, yeah. That's just,
he's teacher.
But now with VAR, it complicates things.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is that there is now a committee of people in a room.
Ugh.
And you don't necessarily know who all those people are.
Mm.
You know, maybe someone else has got access to that room. There was a joke during the World Cup that was in Russia that VAR meant Vladimir assisted referee. You know, which is just a stupid joke because I don't know if, you know, I don't think that I don't seriously think that there was any question of like involvement of corruption in the VAR room. But, you know.
But we see what they mean.
Yeah, we see what they mean, which is the idea that there is a committee of people who are whispering in the referee's ear. Mm. No, it wasn't handball. Or like, yeah, that was a goal. Or, no, it wasn't offside. And it just sort of starts to make it slightly more open to what's the word I'm looking for? Corruption. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of, yeah.
It has changed the game a little bit. The World Cup this year was the World Cup with the highest number of penalties ever, because it meant that any infraction in the penalty box was noticed.
Yeah,
and so a penalty was given. So now we've got more penalties in the World Cup,
and that's the whole point. I kind of like. I mean, I don't like people punching balls into goals and winning. Against England.
With their hands.
With their hands.
No, cheating is bad. Yeah.
Cheating is bad, but playing is good.
Yeah. And I mean, the main thing really is it's changed the game a bit. And obviously that in some ways that's going to be good. And
maybe
in
we're gammons. Ways, look at us.
Yeah.
We don't want it to change.
We don't want football to change. Keep football. So anyway.
Okay. All right
anyway,
then.
Next word is vegan, which is not a new word. Of course, the word vegan has been around for a long time, but the point is it's being used a lot this year.
Yes.
Veganism is really back in a big way. So a vegan is a person who refrains from using any animal product for food, clothing, or any other purpose. So it's not just about diet and food, but it's just that a vegan basically decides no animal products at all. What are some of the things included? What are some of the things that vegans refuse to use? Just give me a list of some things.
What, in food or?
Well, all of it. Food. There's food. Obviously, they don't eat meat.
Yeah.
They don't eat fish.
They don't wear leather.
They don't wear leather products.
Yeah.
And they don't eat food that comes from animals, like no eggs, no dairy, no butter, milk, cheese. Mm.
People can take it quite far because apparently avocados are not vegan.
What?
Yes.
How is that?
I know, because apparently to pollinate the avocado trees, they exploit bees.
Do they exploit bees?
They exploit them.
How do they exploit the bees?
Apparently they truck the bees around, bringing the bees in artificially and using them. It's contentious.
Okay.
Honey, obviously.
So now we're in a grey area. They're just... Recently, someone
was saying veganism is no longer... They were sort of putting forward a case to say that veganism is not just about the food. It's like a way of life, like a religion. You know, it's a belief system.
Right. It's a dogma.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a dogma, isn't it?
I think there's a lot to be said for vegans.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I think...
What do you mean by that expression? There's a lot to be said for vegans. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a sort of positive way of saying, you know, it's I agree with it. I think that it's interesting. I think they've got a lot going for it.
There are lots of good things to say about vegans. Yeah. I'll let you talk.
I think it's something you could really aspire to. I mean, I just think ethically, you know, animals, there's, you know, why should we eat them? We don't need to. And for the environment, as a bigger part of it. I mean, certainly everything to do with the dairy industry is so ugly, so sad.
The way the animals are treated.
Just disgusting.
Like just the fact that, you know, we get milk from cows, and so cows just become these like milk production units.
Just the level of abuse, and it is awful. And I think veganism, there's a lot to be said. So I think that's something that, you know, I would like to be,
yeah.
but it is a hard lifestyle change. And definitely, I mean, I wear leather and I'm wearing a leather jacket tonight. I mean, like, there's so much to be... But yeah, I mean, I agree with it. I support those vegans.
I can't really think of many reasons why, many arguments against vegans.
There's none. Your only argument is like...
They're annoying. That's the only thing. But that even that is wrong to say.
Well, yeah, the only thing you can say is like, I like meat. I just enjoy it. It's tasty. It's not an argument. I think vegans are right, essentially. Yeah,
I think so too. I know someone who gets irritated by vegans. He's wrong, but he does, and he finds them annoying and preachy. That's the thing.
I think because it's becoming more mainstream, I think vegans are less preachy. I think when it used to be such an outlier, you know, like people, it seemed so strange.
Yeah,
they maybe were a bit preachy, but I think younger people are becoming more and more vegan, and it's more and more normal.
Do you think it's, I mean, you know, one of the things that people say about veganism is that it doesn't give you the balance that you need in a diet, that you don't get all of the nutrition and vitamins and stuff that you need. Is that true, do you think?
No, of course not. I mean, because you can, of course, have supplements. But, I mean, a balanced diet is something many people don't have across the world. I mean, look at, you can be quite fat from eating McDonald's and cakes and you're not getting a balanced diet. Eating meat doesn't give you a balanced diet. Eating a balanced diet does.
Some people say that meat is an essential source of certain vitamins and nutrients. That's what some people say. I've had this conversation with people before and I've heard that opinion being expressed, that you need meat. It's the best form of protein or something like that. I'm not sure of the argument exactly, but...
Sure. I mean, it's not true, though. So...
It's not?
Well, I mean, look at India. Loads of vegetarians.
Yeah. They're all right, aren't they?
They're fine.
There's loads of them.
The thing is, I don't know. Like, what is a balanced diet? We don't know. Like, we're not really taught about nutrients and healthy eating and balancing our food. So sure, meat is really handy for protein and iron and all the rest of it. There's plenty of other food.
You can get all that stuff from other things.
Yeah, exactly. Having a balanced diet is about eating balanced food. Like, if you eat meat, you know, steak and chips every day, not a balanced diet.
True. It's just steak and chips. Well, you got the steak and you got the chips. And if you get enough chips, it kind of balances the steak. If you put steak on one side and you get loads of chips and put them on the other side, it kind of balances out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
By weight.
Only
by weight, not by nutritional content.
But this is it. So if you took the time to, like, cook, make food.
Yeah.
You could, you know, learn a little bit.
Yeah.
Balance it up.
That's right. Do you know any good vegan places that you eat, where you eat here? There's one nearby. Yeah,
there's one around the corner from here. It's delicious.
Yeah, I went there the other day with my wife.
What's it called? Sonat?
Sonat. Yeah,
it's lovely. Right.
It's like a canteen, but it's like a hipster canteen. And yeah, it's all vegan. And we went there the other day and I had a bowl of, I don't know what.
Delicious.
I don't remember, but
grains.
It was really good. There was like stuff that was a bit like meatballs.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. And yeah, no, I actually find vegan restaurants really tasty and delicious. We went to one in the States and I had a burger, a vegan burger. And honestly, it was one of the best burgers I've had for ages. And I'm not just saying that, like, it's true. Because, you know, I'll have burgers sometimes. I always think, yeah, I'll have a burger. Yeah, lovely burger. And then when I eat burgers, I'm always disappointed by burgers.
Yeah.
Normal burgers, because they fall apart in your hands. You get covered in sauce and it's disgusting. And the burger stuff is not even that tasty. It's just like an inconvenience to eat.
Yes, it's like, too big.
You end up with stuff falling everywhere. It all falls out the back of the burger. And
yeah.
It's, the concept is, like, better than the actual experience of eating it. But anyway, so... This vegan burger was genuinely one of the tastiest burgers I've had for ages. And there was mushroom in it.
Yeah.
It was like mushroom and some... I don't even know what all the stuff was. I don't know how they made it taste so good. It was fucking delicious.
It's true. I mean, I like meat. Delicious.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And dairy products as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would agree. And you can get some delicious food. But I mean, I think there's lots of us which are missing... vitamins. Like, they say that most people are vitamin B12 deficient.
Yeah, no,
vitamin D.
My doctor prescribed me some vitamins the other day because I haven't been well.
Yeah.
I'm feeling great. Feel much better now. Feel totally great.
Totally great.
Feeling a lot better now. But my doctor was like, take some vitamins.
Yeah,
so I've
sure.
I've got a little pot of vitamins downstairs that I'm taking as supplements. Yeah. So
yeah.
I eat meat, but apparently I haven't been getting the right balance of nutrients in my diet.
Exactly. We could all improve.
But are you going to go vegan, though?
No. No, I'm not.
Neither am I. I know, it's bad, isn't it?
No, it's not bad.
No?
No, of course not. I mean, it's like you slowly move towards things you believe in.
Right.
Within, I don't know, but I mean, I think the thing is, I find too much of anything, a bit too much. Like at home, I basically make vegan food. When I go out,
yeah.
Fancy a bit of magret de canard, I will eat it.
Mm-hmm.
But then slowly, slowly, you might start changing. Yeah. It's like alcohol.
Yeah.
I'm trying to stop drinking.
I haven't drunk alcohol since, I think, the 11th, nearly a month.
Wow.
Because I got ill. Because I caught, like, some virus and it made me feel terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, just absolutely did not want to drink any booze. Mm. Like, you know, my parents were here and my dad had the wine going and I was like, no, I just really don't want anything. It. And then I was ill for a while because it kept coming back because I was tired.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, no, I do not want to drink any alcohol. I just want to get better. If I drink alcohol, it's going to make me feel terrible.
Yeah.
I'm just tired. I don't want booze. Just give me some juice or something or a cup of tea. And so no booze. And I've managed to keep it up. And I'm like the other day I walked past the pub and I was like, oh, a nice pint would be good. But I'm trying to keep it going as long as I can, all the way until Christmas, I hope.
Yeah.
And it's good. I feel good. I've lost weight.
Yes.
I really feel like I've slimmed down a bit. Just like cutting beer out of my diet. Just it's just trimmed me up nicely.
Changes everything.
Yeah, I feel a lot better.
I read this great book, a really good book called This Naked Mind. And it's about controlling alcohol and really questioning why we drink alcohol and how we drink alcohol and how alcohol is seen in the society. And it's this woman who had this high powered career and she kind of was drinking too much. And she worked in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating. It's so interesting. And I've really stopped drinking a lot.
Okay.
But I still do it. Well,
there you go. So,
okay.
You know, we slowly make changes to our lifestyle.
Yes, we're trying.
Bit. Yeah. And then this is the final word in the list.
Okay.
And it is whitewash.
Mm-hmm.
It's a verb to whitewash. A verb. And it means we're talking about films, movies and TV shows and things like that now.
Yep.
Whitewashing is something that is used in reference to things like that. So it's a verb and it means to cast a white actor in the role of a character from a minority ethnic group, or to produce a film or play using white actors to play characters from a minority ethnic group. So, God, more politics and more complex, contentious issues. So, right, you get the idea of whitewashing? It's when they, let's say it's a movie where the character is from an ethnic group, like they say a minority ethnic group. Which is interesting because, I mean, one example of this is from the movie Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
You know about it?
Mm-hmm.
Benedict Cumberbatch. It's a Marvel movie, one of the big Marvel movies in the mm-hmm. franchise. And there's a character in it called what's the name of the character? The Ancient One.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like The Matrix. You know, like
I've seen it.
You've seen Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Ancient One is. I haven't actually seen it.
I've seen it.
The Ancient One is like this kind of like old kind of Kung Fu master type character, right?
Yes.
And in the comics, the Ancient One, I think, is Asian. I don't know specifically what kind of Asian.
Yes.
Like Chinese, maybe.
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's not a minority ethnic group, is it? Chinese in the world?
No.
So it's interesting already that. It's defined as being I understand the concept of the term, but it's just funny that they say they define Chinese as a minority ethnic group when there are more Chinese people than other people. But anyway, that's a side point. But we get the idea of like in that movie, Doctor Strange, they cast a white actress, Tilda Swinton,
yeah.
to play the role of a character who in the canon, in the comic books, is actually of a different race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in America, where the film was made, sure, Chinese people are
a minority.
So that's why I guess they're using the word minority ethnic group. Okay. So that's one example of Tilda Swinton being cast, a white actress, white actor, being cast in a role that was originally for a Chinese or Asian person. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And some people get annoyed by this. Some people disagree with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you think of any other examples?
I mean, that was the one which I'd thought about before because that caused quite a big drama.
Yeah.
I personally thought that casting Tilda Swinton was a great idea.
Why?
In that movie.
Why is that?
Because in some ways that we expected it to be an old Asian man.
Uh-huh.
And by casting this sort of, she's quite an androgynous figure.
Yeah.
She's quite an unusual woman,
yeah,
physically. And by having a white woman, it in a way felt less.
Was that just because it's a woman in a man's role?
Maybe, but also like we expected to see this sort of like Asian sage, you know, and that almost feels a little bit reductive.
Oh, you mean that Asian character is a kind of stereotype already?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the problem for me is that there's not enough ethnic characters. We expect the norm is white man or yeah, white woman.
Yeah.
And then occasionally there'll be token characters who are non-white. The problem is that why are these characters white to begin with? Recently, there was this big drama because in the stage version of Harry Potter, the actress that they cast to be Hermione is black.
Yeah.
And there was this big drama, why is she black? But in the books, they never, and J.K. Rowling said, there's no mention of her ethnicity.
Yeah.
She could have always been black. Why was the original characters all white?
Why do we assume that Hermione was white when it's never mentioned in the book?
Exactly. Why do we start from a place of whiteness,
yeah,
and then anything which is different is, you know, an exception? So I think there should be more ethnic minorities, to use that word, you know, people of colour in movies. But just why do we assume everyone is white? So in this role, like whitewashing, it's a shame. Like why take these few roles for ethnic minorities and make them white? Yes, right. I agree.
Yeah.
In that film specifically, I actually thought it was really nicely done, but that's just my opinion. But globally, why are there so few? Why is a romantic lead white and her kooky sidekick occasionally a woman of colour? Why are films with black actors niche?
Why are films with black actors just about blackness?
Exactly. Why is race such a sort of central figure? So I think that this is something that, but being aware of whitewashing is important to then perhaps take us to that space.
I think also in Doctor Strange, to kind of, let's say, defend them, I guess, against this criticism. And not that we need to do that, because they're Marvel. I mean, they're all right, aren't they?
They're fine, yeah. But, they don't need us.
But in the film, there was a black actor playing a part that I think wasn't black in the comics.
Sure.
So they just stuck a black actor in because he's a good actor. I mean, probably.
Exactly.
He's a good actor, and it was a good decision because, like, yeah, bring... What was his name?
I can't remember.
It's a difficult name to pronounce. He was in 12 Years a Slave. You know the actor?
I mean, I know the actor, but I'm terrible at names.
I'm gonna work it out. This is terrible. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I mean, I would not have got that.
I knew his surname, Ejiofor, but I just couldn't get the first name. So anyway, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Where's that name from? That's a great name.
I don't know. Let's find out. Let's have a little look at Chiwetel Ejiofor. I think he's British, but I don't know. Maybe his parents...
Sure, maybe he's British, but that name sounds
nationality,
African.
Nigerian and British and English.
Nigerian.
He's British, but I guess his parents are from Nigeria.
Yeah.
So I think this must be a Nigerian name. We've got a lot of Nigerian... sort of families settled in the UK.
Yeah.
So he's from the kind of Nigerian background. So yeah, they cast him as a character who I think in the comics was white, and like no one was really complaining about that one. So it's swings and roundabouts.
It's complicated, but there is not enough diversity in movies. I mean, this even comes down to, you know, people, women, people of colour, people with disability, neuro, you know, lead different.
Yeah.
There's more needed.
And maybe the issue here in terms of the movies is it's as much as it being about whitewashing, it's also just about, like, why do they always just cast the same handful of actors in everything?
I know.
Like you know, the Ghost in the Shell movie.
Yeah.
Which is like a famous Japanese manga anime. They cast Scarlett Johansson is actually how you pronounce it. They cast Scarlett Johansson in the lead role. And a lot of people were like, this is whitewashing. She should be a Japanese character, which is maybe they got a point. But also it's kind of like, why does Scarlett Johansson have to be in everything? I mean, she's all right. I quite like watching her, but...
She's okay, but she's sort of vacuous and awful. Didn't she start a popcorn? I turned against her.
Yeah, really?
Because she started this popcorn business.
Popcorn business.
Yes.
What's wrong with popcorn?
Nothing, but they were launching it in the Gymnase, that big theatre in Paris.
Yeah.
And Sebastian Marx, our friend... friend of the podcast, yeah. Was helping. He was somehow translating, and apparently she was awful.
Really?
Yes.
What, just not a very nice person?
Not nice, and it was all big drama, and she was a big pain in the bottom.
Oh, really? Oh.
So she's dead to me.
She's dead to you now. Johnny yeah. Depp was cast in the Lone Ranger as... what was the guy's name? What's the character's
Tonto?
Name? Is it Tonto?
That feels wrong, doesn't it?
I don't want to get it wrong because I don't want to use the name of the horse by mistake and get it all horribly wrong. And then all the horse community will be angry with me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find it. Come on. Oh, yeah, like Jake Gyllenhaal in Prince of Persia.
Well, I mean, I think...
Why didn't they choose a Persian actor?
Agreed.
Persian. Iranian.
Iranian.
Right? Yeah.
But I would agree. Like, why didn't they? Why did they choose these? Because they're famous actors and they think they've got more money. With Tilda Swinton specifically, I think she was a great choice. But Johnny Depp, he's never a good choice. He's gone wrong. Oh, he's gone so wrong.
Yeah, he's gone wrong. But there was a time when Johnny Depp was just brilliant and amazing.
There was a time and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's very far away. Urban, our friend, he's got quite a funny joke about Johnny Depp's new video, his new advert.
Oh, that bloody advert for Sauvage.
Yes.
Which is, they've been playing this advert on French TV and probably TV everywhere.
I've not seen it.
But, I mean, it's not new, Amber. That's the thing. It's been on TV every... flipping day for like 2 or 3 years, and it's basically Johnny Depp is driving a muscle car, an American muscle car,
yeah.
across a desert highway, and he's looking into the distance and he says, I gotta get away, right? And
yeah.
he drives off into the distance and he drives out into the desert and he sort of does a big skid in the car in the dust,
yeah.
and then he gets out of the car and he starts digging in the ground, right, with all the cactuses around and the sun's going down. He digs into the sand and he sort of throws all his jewellery into the hole in the ground.
His Jack Sparrow treasure.
He covers up the jewellery with the spade and then he stands there and looks at the sunset. Sauvage for Om. And it's like Johnny Depp looking into the sunshine, into the sunset. And they played that every bloody day, even during the whole scandal of like, did he hit his wife or not?
He did.
You know, like, and apparently he did, and you know, and they just kept throwing this advert down our throat with like Johnny Depp's in the news about, you know, him, you know, allegedly hitting his wife, and then on you know, every advert break it's him going, I gotta get away, and driving into the desert and burying something in the
Sounds
ground
a bit like Liam Neeson.
No, that's I've got to get away.
Yeah,
it does sound like Liam Neeson. Yeah, like, well, there's Johnny Depp going, I've got to get away. And then there's Liam Neeson going, I will find you. You know, so I don't know. So
yeah.
Johnny Depp played Tonto in the Lone Ranger. Tonto is a Native American character. I mean, you know, I understand why they picked him, because he's Johnny Depp and he does that kind of physical stuff that he does. And I quite liked him in Lone Ranger. I thought I enjoyed his performance.
Sure, but you could have liked someone else.
Yeah, and they could have, you know, maybe they could have found a Native American actor to do it. Another point is that actually, apparently, Johnny Depp does have some Native American heritage.
Careful.
What?
Careful, because that's the whole 23andMe. Nonsense, isn't it?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm 0.1% black and I'm this percent that, so now I can't...
The point there is that white people can become anything they want. Like, if you've got, like, a little bit of Native American heritage, you can be Native American, whereas Native Americans can't just become white, can they?
No.
No.
Doesn't matter how much percent.
It only goes one direction.
Doesn't matter if they've got 50%
yeah,
white.
They're still Native American. It's
yes.
like Barack Obama. He's actually... one white parent, one black parent, but he's black, right? The first black president. Yay! He's actually, you could also equally say he's white, but no. According to everyone, he's black.
So this is about, you know, so we, you know, if you're white with a tiny percentage of this, you're somehow you get to choose your everything.
Yeah.
And which is nonsense. God. You're not.
Oh, bloody hell. Oh my God. This is probably the fifth or sixth part of this Words of the Year series I've done, because I did the 2017 words as well. And the whole thing has been a massive minefield of like me sort of creeping around, trying to talk seriously about the issues and trying to,
yeah.
you know, like actually deal with the issues properly, while also tiptoeing around the issues so I don't fall into a huge hole in the ground and get swallowed. But no one cares. Anyway.
Well, it's interesting to see what words chosen, and so many of them are political, because
yeah.
some years are... surely they're less political.
Well, we talked about them in 2015 with Paul. Do you remember that? And it was stuff like binge watch and man spreading, which is kind of political and other things. So, yeah, I think this particular time, these last 2 years have been particularly divisive. It's been a particularly divisive political time.
Mm.
And there's Brexit and all that stuff is very current at the moment. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Okay, listeners. Happy now. I am actually happy. I'm glad I got through all of that because I've been meaning to talk about like the words of the year for 2017 for 12 months. And it's only now that I've managed to get around to doing it.
So and it's nearly 2019.
It's nearly 2019 now. But that's, you know, for me, it's been like my way of, in a way, summing up the last 2 years.
Sure.
And like dealing with vocab and topics at the same time.
Good topics.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
It's been a lot easier having you here to help me. I have to say, on your when I'm on my own,
you get distracted. You go down wormholes.
Go down rabbit holes and wormholes, and get sucked into different alternate universes where suddenly I'm talking about subjects that I don't feel qualified to talk about.
Yeah.
And but anyway, we got through it. Everything's okay. All right, so let's go and have lunch.
Yeah, let's go have lunch.
Starving.
Me too.
What should we eat? Meat.
Definitely.
maybe we'll go to that vegan restaurant.
Let's go to the vegan restaurant.
Okay.
All right. Then.
Okay. Thanks, Amber.
Take care.
Right then. That's it. The Words of the Year series is done. We survived, didn't we? I think we survived. Did you survive? You did? Good. What about you? Hello? Hello? That's me sort of slapping you around the face. Are you okay? Wake up! Wake up, man! Oh, it's okay, you were just asleep. Oh, sorry. You survived as well, you were just napping. All right, sorry to slap you around. Sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. Okay, I'll let you go back to sleep now. All right, so anyway, we survived. We did. It was a bit tricky there in places throughout the series, as there were some controversial topics that can be difficult to talk about without getting some people's backs up. To get someone's back up is sort of meaning to annoy them or to offend them or to make people, do you know what I mean? To make people, that's not the different dictionary definition of to get someone's back up. If you check in the Collins Dictionary, to get someone's back up, this is a phrase which means to make people, No, that's not how they define it. Oh, I'm going to have to look at the actual definition now. But it's basically when you annoy someone or kind of offend someone. To get someone... Is this going to be in the dictionary? It's definitely a phrase. It's many words in this phrase, though. To get someone's back up. Okay, Collins... It means to annoy someone, okay, or to make someone angry. Okay, fine. So, yeah, I think to make someone, I think it's probably quite a good definition in the end then. So, anyway, it's a bit tricky to talk about some of those topics without getting some people's backs up. I'm sure I got some people's backs up at some points. But I think it was good to have Amber with me for the last two episodes. There was a bit more levity there, I think. Levity. Levity, that's a noun. It means humour or lack of seriousness, especially in a serious situation. It's kind of like making things a bit lighter than they are. Levity is a good thing, I think, because personally, I don't like things to get too heavy and for people to disagree with me angrily. I just want everyone to like me and for everything to be okay and never to be challenged or disagreed with in any way and never to hear any other opinions other than my own, and to live in a wonderful magical kingdom where everyone agrees with me and we're all eating candy floss and riding around on unicorns and where everyone's happy all the time and everyone's the same and it's all perfect. This is the world I want to live in, he said jokingly. Obviously, that's not reality. Anyway, it was nice to have Amber with me, and I think it provided a bit of much-needed levity to some of those topics which could be a bit heavy and all that stuff. All right, good. We did it. We did it, people. We got through the words of the year. A lot of words from the last couple of years there. Lots of things to deal with. So much language. There are so many words, aren't there? There are. What I should do is do a premium episode where I can pick out lots of the other phrases that just came up while discussing those topics. That would be good, wouldn't it? It would. When are you going to do that, Luke? Whenever I get the time. There will be premium stuff coming every month. Okay, so what else do I have to tell you? At the beginning of part four, that was episode 564, at the beginning of that episode, do you remember, I mentioned the last minute special stand-up comedy show I was doing with Paul Taylor at the Comedy Store in the UK. Did you hear me mention that? I made it as a last minute announcement. I said, any Lepsters in London, come down to the Comedy Store. I'm doing a stand-up show with Paul Taylor. He's filming some scenes from his documentary TV series, Stereo Trip. They were doing an episode about stereotypes of the UK, and they filmed some stuff in London, including some stuff on stage with Paul. And I asked some London Lepsters if they wanted to come down. It was a free show. Well, that happened on Saturday, and that was great. That was really good fun, and I met some Lepsters, and it was really good. Basically, so the Comedy Store, that's where it happened. The Comedy Store is a stand-up comedy venue in Leicester Square. They've got one in Leicester Square, or just near Leicester Square in London, and another one in Manchester as well. And the Comedy Store is an amazing place. It's my favourite stand-up comedy venue, and it was very special for me to be able to do a show there. I was on stage for about half an hour, basically kind of like entertaining Paul's audience before he then came on, did a bit of filming using the venue as his, you know, set, and with an audience. He filmed some stuff with himself on stage, and then he did about half an hour of his stand-up material. So the audience got like about an hour of free stand-up. So it was I was really pleased to be able to perform at the Comedy Store. It's the first time I'd been there as a performer. I've been to the Comedy Store lots of times as an audience member, and I've seen some amazing comedy shows. They tend to get the UK's best stand-up comedians there. And the Comedy Store is basically the home of stand-up comedy, or sort of modern stand-up comedy in Britain. And there's a whole episode to be done about the Comedy Store. There's a big story to tell, basically, that proper British stand-up, as it is today, really, started out at the Comedy Store around the same time as like punk music was exploding in the UK, or maybe even just after punk happened in that period. And stand-up was a sort of an underground alternative form of comedy, right? I mean, stand-up, I guess, had already happened in the United States. We had sort of stand-up in the UK with certain people like Billy Connolly, or maybe even Jasper Carrot, and who else? A few other people, but really it became what it is today at the Comedy Store at the end of the 70s and during the 80s. So when you go into the Comedy Store, there are photographs all over the walls of the various comedians that they've had performing there. And you see photos of people like Robin Williams, who came to the Comedy Store during the 80s, and mainly British stand-up comedians who are my heroes. People like Steve Coogan, who is the guy who acts as Alan Partridge. He's performed there, and just everyone, basically, all the people I've ever talked about, Tim Vine, Bill Bailey, Mickey Flanagan, John Bishop, and all those people. So there are photos of them all over the walls. Alexi Sale, Rick Mail, Aid Edmondson, all these people that you may or may not know, who for me are like my heroes, basically. So all their photos are all around the walls, and you know, you can just sense that this is where comedy magic happened over the years. And there are also newspaper articles in framed in picture frames
on the walls, telling the story of the Comedy Store and all that stuff. So it's a really great place to be. And it was very exciting for Paul and me to be backstage. And also backstage, they have like a whiteboard, which is where they write the names of comedians that are going to be performing on the show. And they write the names and the number of minutes next to each name. And we were there like on Saturday afternoon, and we saw the whiteboard for the previous night. And there were names of famous comedians that we knew, people like Romesh Ranganathan and Dane Baptiste and people like that, who I don't know if you know them. If you're into British stand-up comedy, you must know Romesh Ranganathan. He's a very big star at the moment. And so their names were written on the whiteboard. And so Paul and I were looking at the names thinking, oh my God, like Romesh was here just last night. And so it was really exciting. The show went well. It was lots of fun to do half an hour. It was a bit like doing Sorry We're English, which used to be Sorry We're English was the show that Paul and I used to do. This is before his career sort of went into overdrive. And he you know, he's went off and did like hashtag Franglais, his big stand-up show, and all his TV work, which is totally great, you know. That's not my trajectory. That's not the path I've chosen to take, but it's definitely what Paul set out to do. And it's worked for him, and it's brilliant. But we used to do Sorry We're English, which was a two-man show where I'd do half an hour and he'd do half an hour. And so, you know, we haven't done that for a few years now. So it was nice in a way to have a kind of Sorry We're English reunion, even though it wasn't labeled as that. It was nice to kind of do it again and to do it at the Comedy Store. It was just brilliant. And the audience laughed and I had a good time. And my brother was in the audience and I saw him. And I met some Lepsters after the show as well, which was great. Like Lepsters from different places, people who'd encountered the podcast in different ways. So it was very nice to meet some of my audience. It's always nice to meet my audience. So if you are one of those people who I met, then, you know, nice one. Thanks for coming to the show. Very nice to meet you. And maybe I'll see you again if I do another show in London. You should come down to that one as well. On the subject of British comedy, people keep telling me that they like the British comedy episodes. One of the people I met on Saturday told me that. They said that they particularly liked the episodes about British comedy and that they wanted me to do more. And I've had, you know, emails and comments from people a lot since I did the ones about Alan Partridge. How many episodes did I do? Was it 3 or 4 about Alan Partridge? I don't remember now. But I did a few. And since then, people have said to me, please do more. And I've had like a significant amount of comments and messages about that. So I do plan to do more episodes sort of dissecting British comedy. I've got a whole list of things I want to do, different shows and comedians that I want to deal with, and more stuff on Alan Partridge as well. So I do plan to do more. I love doing those episodes. They just take a bit of time to prepare because I can't do that unprepared, because it's about explaining jokes and sort of giving you information before you listen to clips so that you can understand it properly. Because if I go into it unprepared, the chances are you won't understand it as well and therefore you won't enjoy it as much. There's a fine art to doing it in a way. So I do plan to do more of those episodes, and I will in 2019. They just take a little bit of time to prepare. People also tell me that they like the storytelling episodes. And again, I plan to do more of those. They take time as well. If I'm writing the stories myself, obviously I've got to write the whole story before I record it. That takes time. But also if it's other people's work, like I've done a couple of times, just a couple of times, I've read out sort of published stories. Try not to do that a lot. I'm a bit reluctant to read out other people's stories all the time because, well, they're not my stories, you know. But there are royalty-free stories that are in the public domain, which I can use, but they're not always perfect. You know, sometimes they're too long. They might have old-fashioned language, but we will see. There are some text-based adventure stories that I can use. So anyway, there will be some more storytelling episodes. If you like my storytelling episodes, there are quite a few in the archive. And I think they're in two categories, I reckon. Maybe three categories, generally speaking. There aren't categories. It's too difficult to
organize my episodes by category on the website. It's just too complicated because often the episodes cross over categories. One episode might be in multiple different categories. Like you get some episodes that will have a bit of storytelling, have a bit of comedy, have a bit of grammar, have a bit of vocabulary. Sometimes they all mix up the categories. So it's too difficult. I'm sorry. My episodes are not exclusively about one thing. They're about many things. So I can't organize it all by categories on the website. Instead, what you need to do is use like a clever search function, you know, like Control F or Command F on your computer and search by keywords in my episode archive. And that will help you find, you know, the episodes you're looking for. But anyway, the storytelling episodes are in sort of several vague categories. Category one would be me telling a pre-written story written by me or written by another author. Okay, for example, the ones written by me would be the mystery story from episode 29 and the mystery continues from episode 30. The Hyde Park mystery story that I wrote, that's in the app. That's an app-only episode. If you check the app, in the app-only episode's category, you'll find the Hyde Park mystery story in there. And also there's The Hitchhiker by Roald Dahl, which I read recently. And also A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. I read that in episode 320. I adapted it slightly. You can hear that. If you're in the Christmassy mood and you want to hear me telling you a story, check out episode 320. It's A Christmas Carol, a classic story written by Charles Dickens. And also there were the Victorian detective online text adventure mystery stories that I've done on the podcast. Check out episodes 338, 339, and also 425 and 426 for those online text adventure mystery stories. So that's like pre-written stories. Then category two is me telling a story which I'm making up on the spot, like improvised stories, which are usually quite stupid and comical. Like, for example, the pink gorilla story, of course, from episode 125, and the pink gorilla story 2, which is episode 400. Also, there's the talking dog story, episode 153, the prawn story from episode 166, and also the phrasal verb chronicles, parts 1 and 2. I don't remember which numbers they are. But those are kind of stupid, made-up, improvised stories that are often a bit ridiculous and full of silly humour. And then category three is just episodes with some anecdotes and stories from my life. For example, usually the ones that I record about holiday or traveling experiences contain sort of stories about things that have happened to me. Maybe check out episodes in the archive for traveling experiences, or just search for the word anecdotes or story or stories in the title of episodes. So there are some storytelling episodes in the archive and in the app that you might not have heard and which you can check out. But I plan to do more of that kind of thing. My episodes have always been quite diverse, and I aim to keep it that way. I've got more interviews with guests coming up in the future as well. Feel free to send me your suggestions. If I think they are doable, I will add them to the ever-growing to-do list. It's very easy to make a list. It's very easy for me to just put another idea in the list. Like, oh yeah, I've got to do an episode about, I don't know, what would it be? Chimneys. Really, Luke? Chimneys? No, I just thought of that now. But it's very easy. I mean, sometimes people write to me and say, Luke, I'm very interested. I'm a chimney sweep and it's my job to clean chimneys. And I'm fascinated by the language of chimneys. Could you do an episode about chimneys? And I'll be like, well, all right, I'll add it to the to-do. I'll add it to the list. It's very easy to add it to the list, but actually preparing the episode is another question. So it's harder to make the episodes actually happen. But where there's a will, there's a way, I suppose. Also, do check out Luke's English Podcast Premium. There are about 23 episodes. Most of them are episodes, maybe a couple of videos now available, plus some phrasal verbs and more content coming every month. To sign up for Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium. Okay, so that's it. I expect to talk to you again in some form before the Christmas holidays. We're going to the UK to spend a week at my parents' house. I've got no idea if I will get the chance to record anything with my family while we're there. Usually we do, but I mean, it's only if we get the time. I'll see. You can expect more episodes to arrive in the new year, obviously. And hopefully at least one before Christmas, we will see. I've got a couple of days where I might be able to get something recorded, something Christmassy. Obviously, I celebrate Christmas. It's a big deal where I am. I don't know about you. I know that I have listeners all around the world. Maybe Christmas isn't a thing for you. But, I mean, since I'm in the land of Christmas right now, I mean, I've got a Christmas tree in the flat here. I'm not in Lapland, as we established, but I'm not just in Finland. Just, it's Christmas. What are you going to do? I'm just going to go to Finland and just stand in the snow, because that's Christmassy. Now, I'm not literally in the land of Christmas. I just mean that it's Christmas time where I am, so I'm naturally feeling Christmassy. So I might do some sort of Christmas-related thing before we go away on holiday. So hopefully I'll speak to you again before Christmas. But if I don't, well, Merry Christmas. Have a great Yuletide season if you celebrate it. And have a wonderful New Year as well. I think probably more people celebrate New Year's Eve. So whatever it is you're doing at the festive season, then I hope you have a great time. Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for listening to my podcast. And as I said, I hope that I'll speak to you before Christmas actually happens in some form. Okay? But for now, though, that's it. Speak to you again soon. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.